Hello again there, folks. So I wasn't planning on doing a video when I was out and about today. But I've been thinking about something and I thought I'll whip out the telephone and do one of me videos when I'm out walking. Because what I've been thinking about this morning before I set off, I was reading an article in The Guardian, two articles really, and it was one of them was saying that the housing crisis is reaching the an emergency situation. There's just nobody, there's no houses anymore anywhere. And another article that they had was that the more people than usual are now dying on the streets. So you can put the two things together and it's like, well, okay, there is a chronic emergency lack of housing happening now. This is going to result in more people being made homeless. And there's a third factor, of course, and it's that the government is allowing in 1 million immigrants a year now. They did so last year, and they're set to let even more in this year, Tory government. So you can add up there's three things happening. There's too many people coming into the country. There's not enough housing to cope with it. This is resulting in more of the British people, and to be fair, some of the immigrants are going to be out on the streets, and they're now freezing to death. But the flow still continues, and it's like there's a strange thing with this, because to me it is an act of the most astounding betrayal you can imagine. And in fact, when you add that up with other policies and other problems that we're having, energy, the food, all the rest of it, inflation, to then for the government to deliberately throw 1 million new people into the country, it raises a lot of questions. And there's questions like there's ways to approach that which I think make people uncomfortable and they're not used with. And this is what I find interesting, because in the end it is an act of betrayal. But I notice that people kind of struggle with this. Even the language of treason or treachery smacks of like an old world. And now in our kind of new postmodern world, we don't use that kind of moralizing language. And this is also, I think, kind of shaped people's psychology. So they don't, because the moral is, like, there is no sort of absolute morality to abide by. It's kind of just make it up. Do whatever you want. Everybody's free. Everybody forms their own set of morals, of course. Except the sort of PC diktats that come at you through the media. I mean, another thing about this goes without saying, The Guardian cheered all of this on right from the start. And it's a bit of a nerve for them to now say, oh no, look at these problems that we've got because of these things that we wanted to happen. But I think it's interesting when you look at, like, if you say to somebody, I think the government's trying to destroy us, or at least materially cripple us and make our lives as difficult as possible for whatever reason, for reasons which I think I do know, but, you know, in terms of speaking to people in the pub, like, you know, the normal kind of flow of conversation, you say, I don't know why it is, but I think the government are trying to destroy us. And they'll look at you like you're insane, and they'll probably laugh. And because there's too much implied by that. And there's a moment when you have to kind of consider the fact that they are doing that. This is the bit that people don't like. This is what people are uncomfortable with. And all of this, in my view, is to put a sort of psychological comfort blanket around themselves mentally, and then they don't have to face up to what it amounts to an existential problem. And when you look at it, I mean, one of the reasons why I like sort of pulp sci-fi, like the Warhammer stuff and the Horus Heresy, is because you actually they explore the, like these facets in a kind of entertaining, easy to digest, fantastical form. Or you think of what people will be familiar with is something like Revenge of the Sith in Star Wars, which is at the end is the giant betrayal, the deception and the deceit is revealed. And you'll find that there's a thing that happens with people again and again when the idea that they have been betrayed, and not only have they been betrayed, but that the entity, the group, the people who have revealed themselves, not only were they, because not everybody's going to support the Tories, let's say, but you can be kind of indifferent. You can think, they're a bit money grubbing or whatnot. Or you can say, well, they're better than Labour and all of this. But eventually, what you have to confront is the revelation that they are not incompetent and that they didn't do this by accident, and that it isn't just the lefties who are embedded within the civil service, and it isn't just the human rights. Whatever else you want to come up with. And that, in actual fact, you are staring straight into the faces of people who want to destroy you. Now, is that going too far? Because I'm not sure that it is. How is it possible that all of these calamities can happen? You know, how can they be so incompetent to do this? And people will find all different ways to make excuses for them, because they don't want to own up to the fact that they are enemies. Like, to make that, because that implies a lot. Because then you have to think, well, if this is the scale of the betrayal, then who are the loyalists? And again, we return to this kind of archaic language in a way, when you speak in terms of loyalists or friends and enemies in this way. We're past that. This is a modern liberal democracy. Everything's negotiated out. We reach compromises, and we have think tanks and groups and people who survey what the public opinion is. And after all, aren't we in charge? Can't we just vote them out? And it's like this endless sort of kind of bullshit upon bullshit pile that people just don't want to confront what's staring them straight in the face, because to do so would bring about a kind of existential crisis of a kind. And I remember reading a book by about Joseph Stalin. Now, I'll say from the off, it was a little bit kind of too sympathetic for my tastes. But whatever, without getting into all the sort of the problems and the issues of World War II, I remember distinctly the bit on his, there's a bit on his, when the Germans were lining up millions of men and material, equipment and guns, they were shipping them all to Eastern Europe, and Stalin was informed that this was happening. And he constantly played it down. He constantly said that they're doing some kind of exercises, because he had a pact with the Germans, with Hitler. And eventually, when he couldn't kind of cope anymore with what was going on, because they did literally invade. And I remember this book describing it, that he kind of went into a massive depression. Like, he had a kind of crisis moment, that he just couldn't understand the scale and the magnitude of the betrayal, because somebody who he thought he was on good terms with had now just invaded his country and was on his way, you know, they were going to try and destroy him. And this particular, as a political entity, especially the Soviet Union. Again, not to get too bogged down in the sort of the whole thing of World War II. What I find interesting is that there again you see this, even in a man like Stalin, there is this reluctance to face up to what's staring you straight in the face. And this is what we see, you know. And there's something about treason. There's something about the act of treason which has its energy, which has a kind of dark energy to it, which sends a shiver down people's spines, which makes people uncomfortable, because the act that the rug's being pulled out from under your feet, and a group or an entity that you thought were at worst kind of indifferent to you, and they did all of these things and it didn't quite make sense, and you kind of scratched your head a little bit, and it's like the realization has to come eventually that they are at war with you, that this isn't by accident, it's not because they're incompetent, or whatever like little excuses can be trotted out. It's because they want to destroy you, and this is dark. It is dark, and it's the deceit and the deception, which is the darkest part of it all, I think. So really, we're only left with a few options. The first one is the one that we hear usually, the more normie tier, and that would be that the government are just incompetent. They're just too moronic, stupid to rule. Now, I don't believe that, because the government actually facilitate what amounts to a reverse D-Day Normandy landing twice a year into this country, just going in a reverse direction. Instead of landing on the beaches of Europe, they're facilitating an invasion. And they organise that. It's kind of imprinted into the bureaucracy. There's a system and a process in place for dealing with the sheer quantity of people they're allowing in. That's you don't do that when you're incompetent. So we can, I'll just rule that out straight away. The second one would be that the government are indifferent. In other words, they just don't care. Well, the problem is we know they do care, because we would be seeing tens of thousands of people from different countries just wandering the streets. Then they wouldn't have all of these applied psychology and nudge units and all of this propaganda to kind of get the native people on board with it and kind of form people's opinions for it via certain policies which come through the think tanks and through the media like The Guardian and whatnot. So you're left with option three, and that's malice, I'm afraid. I'll let you make up your own minds on which one it is. And people can say, we are getting a bit carried away now. I mean, this sounds a bit much, doesn't it? So you're going to have to say that they are actually, like it is like willfully malicious and an act of destruction. And they're doing that knowingly, because that's the key there. And then I have to say, why should I give them the benefit of the doubt? What have they done to earn my trust? Why is it that the sort of the de facto a priori position that we have on the government is to give them the benefit of the doubt that they are merely incompetent or that they don't care? Why don't we ask the question, are you doing this because you know that it hurts us? You are doing these policies not because you are indifferent, not because you're stupid, but because you want to destroy us. This is the way that this has to be framed. If not, then they can prove us wrong. Let them prove us wrong. I'm happy to see that. But I've seen no reason why I should give these people the benefit of the doubt and kind of think, well, it's not that bad. Really? I don't know. I don't think so at all. I think it is malicious, and I hold them in that degree of contempt, and it's up to them to prove me wrong. And what they'll more likely do is try and get a video like this taken off the internet with the online harms thing they're trying to ram through as it comes. Again and again, all you see is a malicious hatred for us, for the people who are watching this video. And I'm tired of the cope, you know? I mean, look at the online harms bill itself. A final point on this. Why does that exist? Is that incompetence? Is it incompetence when you plan out carefully for a long time, drafting, thinking about how the framing goes, thinking about how the words, it's not about censorship of heretical ideas or dissonance, it's about protecting kids, that's what it's about. It just so happens that most of the alt tech sites will get destroyed by it, but it's just incompetence, they just don't know what they're doing. Or is it, that's not indifference either, is it? Because by they've got policies, they've got plans in place which are specifically not indifferent or aloof. So you've only got one left. Another thing to get back to the treason. The reason you know it's malicious, the reason you know they are your enemy and that it is afoot, the worst is happening, is the fact that they take these measures. You can, one of the sort of giveaways of it, of the sort of, that the policies, that it's treason, that it's treachery, that they are an enemy, is that they will take steps to curtail your counter move. In other words, they are preempting how you will react to what they are doing, and then they are going to make sure that that doesn't happen. You know, they're going to poison the water supply. You know, they're going to do things. It's malice aforethought. It's planned. I don't see any argument to say that this isn't just outright treason, and to the degree that they want you destroyed, because they have made, if this is a game of chess, what they're doing is removing all of the pieces on the board and leaving your king cornered and just surrounded. So that's not indifferent. It's not incompetence. It's malicious. I'll catch you later, folks.